Hello, everybody, and welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we're welcoming in a very special guest to recap MLB opening day while also taking an in-depth look at his amazing MLB career. This is an interview that you won't want to miss as we cover so many aspects of our guest's career. We talk about his first-round draft selection, playing baseball with his brother, and so much more. So make sure to stay tuned, as this great conversation is just moments away. Now, before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Mucci World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Mucci World, creativity at its finest, and by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Celebrate the team's 20th anniversary season by purchasing tickets today. Call 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. Now, before we get to the interview, here's a quick recap of what's been going on in Chicago sports over the past week. The Chicago Bears made headlines late yesterday as they traded away Jordan Howard for a sixth-round pick in 2020 to the Philadelphia Eagles. It's an unpopular decision, and my guess is that they're going to use Mike Davis to become the new starting running back for the team. I think that's a grave mistake, as Davis has less than 40 games under his belt in his NFL career, and in Seattle, had to compete with guys like Chris Carson, CJ Procise, and JD McKissick for playing time. Either way, it seems like the Bears made this move to save money, but in the end, Jordan Howard, whether you like it or not, was a key part of this team's offense, and letting him go may solve the financial problem, but there will be a noticeable void in the Bears' offense next season. In baseball, the Cubs won their opener 12-4 over the Rangers. Javier Baez hit two home runs, and Chris Bryant also added one for himself. On the South side, the White Sox lost in Eloy Jimenez's debut 5-3. Jimenez himself went 0-3 with two strikeouts, but he did provide Sox fans with optimism, knowing that the future is near. And on the ice last night, the Hawks won a big game against the San Jose Sharks 5-4. They sit 5 points out of a wildcard spot with just 5 games to go. On a final note, the Bulls were off yesterday. They play again Saturday night. And right now, they've announced that they're going to rest Lauri Markkanen for the rest of the season due to fatigue. In a related move, they've signed Walter Lemon Jr. to a contract for the rest of the season. He comes from the Bulls' G League affiliate, the Windy City Bulls. This has been your Sports Talk Chicago recap. And now, enjoy my interview with today's special guest. He began his professional baseball career in 2002 after being drafted second overall by the Tampa Bay Rays. Just 2 years later, he made his MLB debut at 19 years old, and by 2008, helped the Rays reach the World Series. After a 12-year MLB career spanning 4 different teams, he retired following the 2018 season. Today, he's a 4-time member of the 2020 Club and a contributor to MLB Network. Please welcome B.J. Upton to the show. B.J., how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And B.J., to start today, I have to ask, because it's something that I'm very curious about, what's going on with your name? Because originally it was B.J., then you changed it to Melvin Upton Jr., and now you're back to B.J. Upton. What's the story behind the initial name switch, then the change back to B.J.?
You know, honestly, I just kind of wanted to represent my father with the first one. And then retirement came, and I went to, do a little TV, and my wife told me that Melvin Upton Jr. was too long, and it didn't sound right on TV. So I was kind of, I kind of had some help making the change back, so to speak.
Well, I'm glad we have the story behind that now. I think that's something that many people wanted to know about. Now, let's take a look at the current MLB season with opening day just getting underway. This past offseason, there were many players like Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, for example, who changed teams, and others like Mike Trout, Nolan Arenado, and others who signed some record-breaking extensions. With all of this in mind, which teams do you see making a big push in 2019?
You know what? I think it's honestly too early to say in the year. I think on paper, if you look at the Phillies, they're pretty young. They got a good young nucleus, and obviously adding Bryce Harper to any line obviously is going to be good for the team. But I think, you know what, the way I think it's just even across the board. I mean, right now, I mean, obviously you have the contenders are the winners from last year, the Red Sox. The Dodgers are always going to contend. It's just kind of sporadic. The divisions are kind of evenly matched, so to speak. We don't know what the Yankees are going to do. I don't know. I think it's way too early in the season to tell. I think things will start to shape up right before All-Star break, like they always do, and then it's a race to the finish.
Going back to Bryce Harper and Mike Trout and their new contracts starting this year, what was your reaction when you found out about the exact dollar amount that both Harper and Trout would be earning over the lifetime of their new contracts?
You know what? It wasn't surprising. I think this is something that we've been talking about for the last 2 or 3 years, what's going to happen when those two guys are free agents. And obviously the Angels did let Mike Trout get to that point, but Bryce Harper got to test the market, and you throw guys like Manny Machado in there. I think we all, you know, the guys that kind of came up in my era, I think we all saw it coming. We kind of saw the numbers getting to that point. I just don't think overall we saw that amount of years attached to it. I think, you know, kind of when I came up, I think we'd be more aligned with basketball by now. But those guys are young, and they've solidified themselves. And pretty much, I think those deals run those guys out till they're about 39 or 40 years old. So they're lifers with the team that they're wearing uniforms with so far. Obviously, a lot of things can happen over the course of a career, but I don't think the top number surprises anybody. I mean, it didn't surprise me. I just think more along the years that were tacked along with it.
Do their large contracts compel you to come back yourself and give it another try?
Absolutely not. I'm A-okay going to the golf course and hitting balls, or whether it's playing or hitting balls every day. And I'm coaching Little League for my son, so I'm having fun doing it. And it's been fun being at home. Obviously, you know, seeing opening day yesterday kind of gives you that itch again. But I tell you what, I wouldn't trade my kids and my family for the world.
You know, on a serious note, thinking about your retirement and your career, you last played in the majors at 31 years old. You're only 34 right now. Why did you cut your career short? And secondly, would you be open? Would there be any possibility for you to make a comeback?
You know, that's a good question. I think, to be honest with you, where the way the game is now, I think they're leaning more towards the younger guy. I think you see the number of veterans that were left on the market this offseason and some that are still left on the market. I just felt like I didn't feel like going through that process. I mean, that once it got to that point, it was starting to feel like a job. And, you know, I always told myself, and Michael Kadire told me a long time ago the day that it feels like a job, it's time to walk away. And, yeah, that was it for me, and I was okay with it. I mean, obviously it's tough at first when something that you've known your whole life and just to walk away from it. But I understood, and like my father told me, you have to walk away at some point. I mean, it was going to happen eventually. But just the way the game is, and I'm not bad-mouthing the game by any means. It's just a game right now where it's not favorable to the veteran player.
B.J. Upton here on Sports Talk Chicago. And B.J., sticking with your baseball career, you were drafted second overall by the Tampa Bay Rays in 2002, and by 2004, at age 19, you had made your MLB debut. What was that journey like for you, being drafted, then debuting in Major League Baseball as a teenager, and how did you manage the spotlight and the pressure at such a young age?
It was all new, obviously. It was a quick transition. I mean, here I am still a teenager, and I'm standing in a clubhouse with guys that I watched growing up, I mean, which was, at that time, wasn't too long ago, you know? So It was a quick change, but needless to say, I had to grow up fast. And you know what? I wouldn't change that either. It was a fun time. I didn't really know what was going on. I was living life. I mean, I was living my dream. 19 years old in the big leagues. I mean, I think any kid would tell you they enjoy that. So, I don't know, man. It was a lot of fun. It was a learning experience, man. I got to be around some good guys, some guys that played a number of years in the big leagues. I got to be managed by one of the great managers in baseball, Lou Piniella. So, it was a fun time of my life, man. And like I said, I don't regret it at all.
Who was your favorite teammate on that Rays team as a youngster? Who took you under their wing at that time?
You know, it was a weird transition, man. when I got called up, it was a weird transition because a lot of the guys on the team, they were playing to get out. I mean, we at the time, we weren't a good team. So it was a weird transition because a lot of it happened so fast. All the older guys, they were out of there so fast that all the young guys came in and they called us up and they let us play. But one of the main guys was Carl Crawford because he was kind of in the middle of it. He was still one of the younger guys, but a lot like me, he was in a situation where he got called up at a young age. So for me, he was more of my crutch than anything. Until the following couple of years where we got a guy like Cliff Floyd on the team where we could both lean on. We didn't have to lean on each other because we were still learning. We were learning on the fly. That's how young our organization and our team was. So, yeah, we kind of learned on the fly until we got those good veteran guys around us, and that's kind of where the organization took a turn was when we got good veteran guys around to kind of teach us the way.
So let's go to 2007, talking about the veteran guys and the roster overhaul. Now, during that year, you sustained a quad injury, and it kept you out for over a month. And when you returned, you became the team's starting center fielder, moving from second base. So why was that transition made, going from second base to the outfield? And also, how difficult was it for you to make that transition in just over a month coming off of the injury?
Oh, man, it's funny you say that. I mean, it's no secret. I mean, I had my struggles in the minor leagues with fielding, and that was one of probably my biggest asset coming into the draft. It wasn't whether I was going to be able to field a ball, it was whether I would be able to hit. And all of a sudden, I got the pro ball, and it was the opposite. So I spent some years in the minor leagues at shortstop. 06, I went back to Durham to play more of a utility role. So I played third base and shortstop. And I remember telling Jim Hoff, our minor league field coordinator, Lord rest his soul, he just passed away a long time in the Rays organization, Blue Jays. But I told him, I'll never forget it, we're out for early work in Durham. And I said, Jimmy, I said, just let me go play outfield. I can go do it right now. I said, I promise you. And he said, no, Beach, you're a shortstop. So I finished the year at short and third that year. Come in the spring training, and Joe pulls me in the office and said they wanted me to be a super utility guy. So that spring training, I played every position except pitcher, catcher, and first base. I pretty much played every game. Comes down to the end, I end up making the team as the second baseman over Jorge Cantu. So long story short, fast forward, blow my quad in May in Miami. And this is right around the time Rocco was dealing with the mitochondrial disease where his muscles wouldn't recover. And I go on the DL and I go off on my rehab and I get a call from Andrew Friedman and Vero Beach, I'll never forget. And he said, hey, what do you think about playing center field when you get back? And I said, sure. And I was in the starting lineup at second base for my rehab assignment, went in, talked to the manager, ended up playing center field, and the rest is history.
So let's move now to the 2008 season. A great story there on your transition. And obviously in 08, the year after your transition, that was a memorable year in Rays history. And you yourself played an important role in the postseason. Now, before we get to that specifically, I want to ask about your relationship with manager Joe Maddon, because that season, you were twice disciplined by him for lack of hustle, and he claimed that you made some mental mistakes. In your opinion, who's to blame for what happened, and what are your thoughts on Joe Maddon as a manager himself?
I think the blame is youth, man. I think just, like I said, we were learning on the fly, and still even at that time, I mean, that was only my second full season in the major leagues. I got called up in 04, but that was still only my second full season. So, I think it's just youth, and I don't think any manager or player is going to see eye to eye all season. I think that's just the nature of it. I mean, you see somebody from February to October, it's bound to happen. It happens in every clubhouse, and then clubhouses don't talk about it, but that's just what it is. I don't read too much into it. I look back at it now. Do I think some of it was warranted at some times? No, but it doesn't really bother me. And Joe as a manager, I think he's a great manager, man. He's a player's guy. He has a way of getting you to believe, and that's one of Joe's biggest assets, is he never lets you doubt yourself. So he has his own way of doing things, absolutely, and it's way different than any other style that you're going to see. But once you get to know it and you understand Joe and his thinking behind things, then you're 100% on board with what Joe does. So I got nothing but good things to say about Joe, but everything's a learning experience, and on both ends. You know, I'm sure over that span of time, Joe learned some things that he didn't know also. So it's just part of the game, man. It's part of growing up on all aspects.
Well, let's go back to the 2008 season now and talk about the postseason, because you put together a historic performance, hitting 7 home runs, driving in 16 runs across 16 games. Tell me about why you did so well in that stretch, and also being a part of a Rays team that had never finished 500, let alone made a World Series appearance until that season.
You know, I think just the team as a whole, it wasn't just necessarily me. I think, yeah, obviously I hit the home runs and things, but it was just the attitude that we had. There was no pressure on us. Nobody on earth expected us to probably even win 60. I think we predicted to win 60 games that year, something like that. Nobody expected us to do what we did. So once we got to that point, it didn't matter to us. We were out there having fun. It was like backyard baseball to us. So with all of that, I mean, honestly, I couldn't even tell you why it happened. I don't even really remember half of it. I mean, I really have to watch it to really remember what was going on, but I don't really remember half of it.
Did you enjoy, as a player, being in that situation where you'd have nothing to lose and you'd just be playing for fun and things would end up happening? Or did you like the fact that you were a favorite, like when you went to the Braves and you guys were projected to win the NL East every year? What's your thought on that?
I think as an athlete, you enjoy both. I mean, you like to be the underdog for people to tell you that you can't, that you can't do it, but you also like to be the team with that target on your back. That means everybody wants to be like you. So for me, having dealt with both, I think the more satisfying is definitely the 08 run. That's definitely more satisfying. But, I mean, obviously the year in Atlanta that we had where I think we won the division 13 games, by 13 games. I mean, obviously that's satisfying too, because that's a lot of relaxing and there's not a lot of pressure pitches coming down the stretch. But the 08, that's definitely a little bit more satisfying because nobody gave us a shot. Nobody gave us a shot and we did it.
Now going to your time in Atlanta, you joined your brother Justin, signing with the team after your time with the Rays. What was it like for you to play with your brother in the major leagues? I mean, you had grown up together, you had dreams of making it to the bigs one day, then come years later, you have the opportunity to take the field alongside him. What was that dynamic like for you?
Obviously, very exciting. You know, I'll never forget actually waking up the morning to go work out after the morning after he had been traded. And honestly, I couldn't believe it. But honestly, it's a dream come true to even have that opportunity and to have it on two different teams in Atlanta and San Diego. I think any brother that's played in the major leagues or that's playing in the major leagues right now would love that opportunity, and to be able to say that I got the opportunity to do that is a blessing. And like I said, it was definitely a dream come true.
And in your first season with Justin in 2013, you guys were facing the Cubs in a game in Atlanta in an early season matchup. In the ninth inning against Carlos Marmol, you hit a long home run to dead center field to tie the game up. Then Justin came up next, and he went deep to center field to end the game. So how special was that moment for you, going back-to-back to win a game against the Cubs with your brother?
Well, very special, because I think that was the last one I hit for a long time that season. honestly, to kick off the season like that at home, I thought it was only going to be good things from there. But obviously it wasn't. But that, as far as memorable moments in my career, that's definitely at the top of the list.
So after that 2013 season, you had played three more years in the majors and one more in the minors before calling it a career. Looking back on everything that you have accomplished and experienced in your 12-year career, is there any big regret that you have about your time in the MLB?
You know what? That's a good question, because I've been thinking about that lately. Honestly, I've been thinking, like, dude, is there anything that I regret about my career? I don't know, because I learned a lot. You make mistakes, you learn. You do well, you learn. I think just all around, man, it was, looking back at it now, is all about learning and about growing as a person. You deal with so many different personalities and people on a daily basis, man, that baseball definitely helped me grow as a person. And I don't know. That's, like I said, that's a great question. I really don't have that answer for you. But if I had to guess, you asked me that a couple months, a year from now, I'd guess that my answer is probably going to be no.
And BJ, before we let you go today, I wanted to ask about something that happened during your time with the Braves. Now, a fly ball was hit to left center field. Both you and your brother were pursuing it, and you guys ended up colliding. Now, fortunately, you made the catch and everything was okay. But what happened there, and what'd you tell your brother after the collision?
First off, play your position. Second off, I'm the center fielder. I have priority. And to go along with that, I'm the big brother. Move the hell out of the way.
Well, BJ, thank you so much for your time today. Had a great time and hope to have you on again soon. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thank you.
What an honor it was to have BJ Upton on today's show as we talk with him about his amazing MLB career, some current MLB news, and also the verdict on his name change. And what I enjoyed most about this interview is that I was able to talk to him about so many interesting details in regards to his career. I mean, making your debut at 19 years old, playing baseball with your brother, playing under Joe Maddon, the current Cubs manager. All of this information is noteworthy and pertinent, and I'm so glad that BJ took the time today to come on the show and talk about his experiences in Major League Baseball. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at @ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zagluel. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply type in your email, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And remember, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and every podcast from the 2018-19 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. And finally, if you enjoyed today's podcast, make sure to check out my new radio show every Monday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. You'll still hear my same hard-hitting Chicago sports opinions. Plus, we'll cover national sports issues, introduce special segments, and of course, welcome special guests on every show. Again, that's every Monday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. Thank you again for listening to today's show, and have a great day.